All right, I'm just going to start off with one quote, and then we'll get started. This is from The Garden to the City by John Dyer. He says, "We are an image-saturated culture. We find that people often care more about how they feel about something than whether it is logically correct or morally right." So it's going to kind of tie into what we're talking about today. Last week, we talked a lot about relationships, loving your neighbor, and how technology affected that. This week, we're going to talk more about the individual, just what you're watching, what you're seeing, how it affects your just... I mean, it crosses over into how you relate to other people, but it's more focused on the individual. And I think this week you'll see it's a little more... You'll feel like it's more pertinent to younger children. I think last week, talking about relationships, you're wondering how's a five-year-old, you know, doing that. But I think it was pertinent as they grow older and how you do things, but... I think this week will be more applying to that. We're going to dig into content, security, some kind of digital conditioning, what I call it, how it works in us, some rules, some daily practices we should do, and then we'll probably hopefully end up with peer pressure, how kid to kid, parent to parent. I think we need to talk about that as well because it happens quite a bit. So the goal of these two lessons that I've done or didn't finish up today is... to just give you information how technology can affect us and our children. I'm hoping that the goal isn't to overwhelm you or to make you feel guilty on what you're doing, because technology is coming at you fast and hard all the time, so we've just got to evaluate. Hopefully these will be helpful, and we make mistakes every day, so all of us do that. These things will help us hit our strike zone, which I talked about last week since I like baseball. And the other goal is to give us some ideas how to counteract what's happening with technology in our lives. So let's get started. I think we all know how pliable young children are. I don't think I have to try to push that to explain that to you, how much, you know, they're molded at a young age. The good thing about that is if they get some bad habits, we can change those quickly and get them back to where they need to be. But I do want to... emphasize just one little thing from that, and this is from a book called You Are What You Love. I know the Evans, we've been through this. Just this one story is going to be the only crossover. Did a home group I did on this book. It's a very good book, but anyway, it talks about... I'm going to just read you one little excerpt from this book from a guy named... this guy named Destin Sandlin, and he created a video called The Backwards Brain Bicycle. Okay, so he creates a bicycle with an important hitch. When you turn the handlebars left, the front wheel turns to the right, and vice versa. Having ridden a bike his entire life, Sandlin literally cannot ride this bike. His neural pathways and bodily habits are trained for a regular bicycle. His, quote, habituations are very settled. Only with extraordinary effort does Sandlin learn to ride this bike after 8 months of practice. So old habits die hard. But the story was very different for Sandlin's son. He learned to ride the backwards bike in just 2 weeks. So, I mean, I think, I'm hoping that will emphasize how important it is for habits when they're young. As we get older, I mean, as adults we can change things, but some things when they're difficult makes it very hard to overcome that way. Stepping from that, I want you to hold on to what that was said there into a book called Growing Up Social by Gary Chapman. There's a little bit of science here. He talks about neuroscientists mapping the child's brain when they're young up to teenagers, and they found that what he's called the frontal brain circuits, or where you really learn to pay attention and deep think, that part of the brain grows the fastest from ages 3 to 6. And it also, around puberty, gets a little spurt of growth there as well. I want us to think about that too. So think about those first two things as we go into this next topic. There's a guy named Nicholas Carr that I came across. He's a writer, and he noticed that he was having trouble concentrating, even on small things, even on something he really enjoys, like reading a book. So it made him wonder about this, so he decided to research it and write a book. And he wrote a book called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. Okay, so I don't want to... I mean, Nicholas Carr, I haven't read the book, but I've watched a few talks on him. I'm not recommending the book, but I do like the one quote from him that we're going to build upon. And he says, When we go online, we enter an environment that promotes cursory reading, hurried and distracted thinking, and superficial learning. It's possible to think deeply while surfing the net, just as it's possible to think shallowly while reading a book. But that's not the type of thinking that technology encourages and rewards. So then they did a study on two groups of people. So they took a group of people that were very digitally inclined and some people that liked to read books. And they gave them a short article and they said, okay, you've got this much time to read the article. Then they did a second experiment where they took a different article and they said, okay, you have as much time as you want. So in the first experiment, both groups retained about the same amount. But in the second study, the group that physically readers actually retained quite a bit more. So it's not that you can't read through digital technology, but what it conditions you to do is to, think quicker, skim, and not dive into it that deep. So, and we'll get into more digital conditions in just a second. But so what this technology world promotes is we strengthen our skills to grab things quickly in short time periods, and we process information quickly, which is not a terrible thing to have. We get some better visual acuity, so a gamer might see things out of his peripheral vision. I mean, I know when I was young, I played those stand-up video games. Everybody knows about them. Asteroids or something. I'd tell my parents, hey, my reflexes are getting so much better by doing this. It's helping my game. So I think that gamers might say the same thing. I can see things better. But I think what's proven, what we lose, what weakens that, the area gets weakened is critical thinking, creative thinking, mindful knowledge acquisition, concentration, meditation, contemplation. These types of things, surfing the net or being on there, does not strengthen. It actually weakens. So if we take that all together in that first part there, our kids are very pliable, and then from a certain age, they really are growing in the areas of paying attention and deep thinking. What if they're really promoted technology all the time? Will they be hindered in getting those skills? Will they not get those skills? What happens if they become adults don't have deep thinking skills? I really think, I'm just trying to make you think about that, make all of us think about that. Because when you're an adult, let's say you've learned those skills, and then if you start being more internet inclined, you can really get those skills back. But if you've never really attained those skills, I think it is a lot like the backwards bicycle in the sense it's very difficult to learn deep thinking, critical skills, where it's not as hard to learn, quick thinking, internet, searching, skimming. I think that's a much easier skill to acquire. So I think that's something we need to think about when we decide, well, how much technology do we give our kids when they're small? So from that, I'm going to move on to some digital conditioning, that's what I call digital conditioning. So I think there's three things that technology will condition our children to think, and that there's three things. Everything's interesting, everything is instant, and everything should have immediate rewards. So I'm just going to do just a quick through on those. I mean, there's no dull moments on technology. They want you to have right in front of you all the time. It's centered around the child. I mean, even music. You pick what music you want. You never get something you don't want. You just can go and choose and make sure you're not bored with it because you want to be entertained. It constantly fills the screen with colors and movement, so it's very, it makes you fixed on that. It's edited never to require too much concentration or contemplation. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot to sit there and watch things or play a game most of the time. And one thing it really does, it makes things very vivid, and I think we have trouble once we do that, our children, they have trouble looking around and finding the abundance in God's creation, because that would require us to wait and pay attention, contemplate, explore. In the tech world, you don't have to do that. You just have it there. If you don't have it there, you go over here and you find it pretty fast. The second thing is that it makes things, children think everything should be instant. I should have the information like that. I mean, I know as an adult, I do enjoy being able to look up stuff and get it quick. But I think as a child, if everything's instant and easy, you never grow those skills of pushing through, persevering. I look back at a lot of things I've learned, even in software or whatever it might be, and you go through those times, everybody would agree with me, I think, is when you go through those times of difficulty trying to persevere and learn this subject or learn how to do a certain skill, that you're like, this is terrible. But then you look back and you know, all that formed who you are and how you learn. But if you never really have that kind of, if you're always given advice or something that's quick, you never really develop that skill. Even when I code sometimes, I can grab someone's code off the internet. They're all over the place. You can use it. But if you don't understand how it works, it really, you're not understanding, how to do your job, is what I would say on that. So we hand our kids these screen-based devices, and they respond to touch and voice. It's just like that. It doesn't take a whole lot. They're engineered for easy use at all ages, and they're very enticing to kids. I think if you hand a phone or a tablet to a 2 or 3 year old, you'll be surprised. Maybe you won't be surprised. How quickly they pick up on what to do, how swiping, turn things on. It's very transforming. And then the trick is try to get it back from them and see what happens. I mean, that kind of tell you how enticing these things are for children. And I don't think that, I think some for leisure type activities, I'm not saying you should never have devices and that. I mean, I think it's fine for some things, but for young children, I mean, they're really primed to learn. And they don't need to be entertained and fixed all the time on these things. And the third thing is immediate rewards. I mean, programmers understand that everybody wants a reward. They want to get a badge. They want to get a notification on how well they're doing. Or they want to get leveled up in a game or something that just keeps them, oh, I want to keep going on this. That's just part of, I mean, that's how they make their money on doing stuff like that. So if our children are always wondering, is real life always interesting? Is it always instant? Are we always getting immediate rewards? So I think as the kids, as even us as well, but our children that are using these devices, technology, are they being taught things that really don't apply when you're an adult or when you have your own family? I think, and again, I'm just trying to give everybody ideas to, when you come up with your strike zone or how you're going to work in your family, these are things to think about, what's happening. It's not try to scare anybody off. Oh, my goodness, I'm not going to take the iPhone and throw it away. They can never see it. Some of the outcomes of these activities, they become addicted to the activity. I'm not even talking about content. I'm talking about just the activity of being on them. It's easy just to be entranced with these things. Like when you're watching TV or playing video games, they talk about getting a little drip of dopamine all the time. So that pleasure center gets enhanced. And then the more and more you do it, the more and more you're going to need to satisfy you. Just like from this book, Digital Invasion, this person, this author says, many of our internet behaviors, such as gambling or gaming on the internet or even Facebooking, can do as much damage to the pleasure center as any powerful drug. The pleasure center can become so flooded that only the big stimulants can get a message to the pleasure center. Little ordinary pleasures are ignored because they do not have the power to overcome the flooding. What this all means is that the thrills of our digital world, if abused, can be as addicting as any drug and rob you of the simple joys of life. So, I mean, you wouldn't give your kids something that's a drug, so we have to be very careful on how much they are involved on watching and doing as well. You don't want them to become addicted to that activity and just not pay attention. Like last week, all of a sudden, like we said, we're not paying attention to each other, not paying attention to ourselves. Who are we? We're just entranced. And also, another thing I think is huge with this activity is that it does so much stimulation to the brain that it can release a stress hormone, cortisol, and which inhibits you from feeling calm and comforted, so you get no peace of mind. I think if you're playing these things, I kind of equate it to like drinking a monster drink. You just keep drinking the monster or some kind of energy drink. I don't know if anybody's done that. It makes you can feel kind of scattered. Or if anybody here has ever watched too much TV or played a game or been entertained so much that after they're done, how does everyone feel? I mean, does anyone ever feel, oh, I feel so rested now? I mean, I've done that. I don't feel rested. I just, it makes me want to go out and run or something so I can feel better. But I think it really can make you feel anxious, too, as well. I think there's a lot of anxiety in culture today with young people. And I wonder, I don't have any proof, I wonder by being on devices all the time, is it because they're on, or is it because they're becoming anxious? They're never quieting themselves. And all of that activity then leads to distraction, which I think we can all say that it's easy to become distracted. In 12 ways your phone is changing you, Tony says, overconsumption of distraction is just as unsatisfying and ultimately sickening as overconsumption of junk food. I kind of like that. In Psalm 119, verses 37 and 38, which I really like this verse about this area, it says, "Turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things and revive me in your ways." I think we have to think about that. What are we looking at? What are we spending our time doing? We get a text, we get an email, we check the news, check the weather, check Facebook. We're always, stuff we kind of talked about last week. But it's so easy for us to get distracted. And I think from that, it leads to what I call it, I think C.S. Lewis calls it, too, calls it the nothing strategy of Satan. So, you know, you feel like you're doing a lot, but you're really not getting anything done. So I think if from the Screwtape Letters, I think he really tells what's happening even today, even though he wasn't talking about technology. He says, I don't know if everybody's read C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters, but if anybody ever wants some good self-reflection, I think you can read a lot of those letters to Wormwood and feel like, wow, that just really hits me, that hits me. And this is one of them. Screwtape writes to Wormwood, the upper demon to the lower demon, says, "Nothing is very strong enough to steal away a man's best years, not in sweet sins, but in a dreary flickering of the mind. Over it knows not what and knows not why, in the gratification of curiosities so feeble that the man is only half aware of them, in drumming up fingers and kicking of heels and whistling tunes that he does not like, or in the long, dim labyrinth of reveries that have not even lust or ambition to give them a relish, but which one chance association has started them, the creature is too weak and fuddled to shake off." I think that's a lot different writing than we're used to reading, but in technology you can also need to get lost in just checking worthless things. I'm not saying everything checking your phone is worthless, but I'm just saying, or your device or email. But it's easy to get lost in that. And if our kids are learning that at a young age, or if we're even the teenagers, or even us, we can get lost in this nothing strategy. I think it's a very good strategy of Satan to try to get us to focus on things that really don't mean a whole lot instead of what God's put before us. So from that, we're going to move on to the actual content of what we're watching. So I'm going to go through these kind of areas kind of quickly. So if anybody has any comments, wants to talk about certain areas, please feel free to raise your hand or speak up. But I'll start with two quotes on content itself. So Francis Schaeffer says, "Christians have two boundary conditions, what men can do and what men should do." And then in Philippians 4:19, which is a verse that I've quoted quite a bit in my house, "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." I think this is something very important to think about, what we're consuming as parents, as kids. What is it? How is it affecting us? Is it something that glorifies God? Is it something that helps us become more Christ-like? So the first area we're going to talk about is like movies and TV shows. So obviously, you got sexual content, you got violence, you got language. We all become desensitized by these things. And I think as adults we have a better, maybe we fool ourselves, maybe we don't, but I think we do have a better, if we've been trained well, we can, even if we watch something that's probably not the best thing, it won't affect us as much as obviously a child who's being formed, their ideals are being formed, their habits. But I still think it's very, we have to be careful of that. And another thing about movies we have to be careful is with the overall message. We get fooled sometimes with, oh, this is a pretty clean movie, but what's it saying? What's it telling us? What kind of character traits is it giving us, our children? I mean, even animated movies, they all have their agenda. So we just need to pay attention to that. Music. Okay, so I'm not a huge music person, even though I can name a lot of songs. For some reason, when I was young, I listened to stuff that it just comes to my mind. I ask my kids, a word will come up, and I'll just start, oh yeah, that's, I'll start singing. And they don't like that part, but I don't listen to a lot of music now, but I know, I really believe that, you know, there's two things about music that are interesting. You got the lyrics, and I think as important, you have the mood of the music. So what are the lyrics saying and what your children are listening to? What are we singing? I don't look back at some songs I've listened to and I listen to the lyrics and I go, wow, I shouldn't really be, you know, I shouldn't be singing that. And I think the mood part is very important too, because it really can put you in build up certain emotions, like when David, you know, played the harp for Saul. It can change things or it can make you go a certain way. So if you're depressed, what about listening to depressing music? Or if you're anxious, I think sometimes we get too worked up in the lyrics, but we have to watch out what our kids are listening to as far as what kind of mood, what's it promoting? Let's just say that. And I think this is, talking about movies and music, it's a good thing as the kids get older, after you watch something, or after you watch a movie together, or they watch, I want you to talk about it. Well, talk about some things that you didn't think were good, or just get their input on it instead of just telling them they can't do this or what. Especially as they get higher teens, they need to be able to start making decisions for themselves. And it's good to have these talks. What do you think about that? Just to see how they're understanding. Or that music. Well, tell me about that music. Tell me what you think the artist is trying to convey there. Why are they singing this way? What are they trying to promote? And I think it'll just get them thinking about what they're doing instead of just, hey, this has got a great beat. I love this thing. It makes me feel good. A good artist will do that. They get a good beat in there. They can get you hooked on whatever they're saying. So, social media. The content on there, I think we have to be real careful too. What are our children posting on there? What are their friends posting? I think is just as important. What are they reading? Who are they friends with? Are you their friend? I think that's something that you have to be, I think it'd be important to be, so you can monitor all that. I'm not a big social media person. I'm not an anti, but I mean, it can promote some negative things, covetousness, jealousy, envy, as we talked about last week, it can change relationships and how the kids relate together. It can cause a lot of conflict, I think, as well. Video games. The virtual world of video games, very enticing to all kids, to adults too as well. If you watch a video game these days, they're very impressive. I mean, the imaging is unbelievable. It's not real. And there's a lot of things in games you have to be careful of. You know, the same as movies, there's a lot of violence, language. What's the purpose of the game? What's it teaching our children to do? And then the flip side of the content part is online gaming, you're talking, you can be talking to other people online. I think, who are our kids talking to? Who are they playing with? There's people out there that look for kids and to try to get them to connect. So I think just in that part of the content, you have to be, it's not really content related, but it is related to games and online and how they relate to others. And we'll end content with pornography. I'm just going to do a quick through on pornography. I think pornography could be a whole series of itself right now. But, I mean, it's right in front of our faces. It says 30% of all traffic right now online is pornography. I mean, it's easy to get. One quote from this book is 4 years old that I got this from Gary Chapman. 62% of teenagers say they have received a nude image on their phone, and 40% say they have sent one. It's huge. Even if you go to a normal website, let's say, my dad was here a month ago. I went on ESPN to check like a score, and on the right side, he's like, what are you looking at? And there's, a picture of this lady standing there standing a certain way with not much clothes on. I'm just thinking, even on sites, regular sites we think are okay, it might not be pornographic, but it might, not be the best thing for teenage boys or whatever to look at, or any age actually. So In a blog post from Theopolis, thank you, Brian, for I didn't see this, Steve Jeffrey from Emmanuel Evangelical Church in London talks about, he's quoting this article where they say there's been a huge drop in sexual promiscuity in the last 25 years, and so that seems like good news. But really they found that this reason is because people are more by themselves on their phone in pornography, so they're less inclined to go out and be with other people. So, I mean, it's affecting even that relationship. And as we know, that will even, I mean, it rewires your brain, makes it hard to have intimacy as kids grow older. I mean, even adults as well. I mean, we want to spare our children and our spouses from this type of stuff. Obviously, we need to have appropriate conversations with the kids at a certain age. But I just think it's, like I said, I can't dig into it totally. We could have a whole series on this. But it's, from a content standpoint, it is a huge deal that's easy to get. And as we'll get into security just after this, we'll talk about some things we can do. One thing before I move on, I do want to say that all these content-related sins and even pornography, I want to make sure everybody realizes that it's blown out of proportion in one sense that sometimes we think really bad of people that do that. I think we need to make sure that we know that as the body of Christ and as a family, that it's a sin that can be overcome, it can be forgiven. And I think we need to work together on that, not have a work together. We don't want this to happen, but if it does, we need to work through it. It's all over the place in young adults. So I just want to make sure we have that in mind, that we just don't keep people off because then people end up being more isolated when they do that. Talking about content, we're going to switch into security, and this is where I'm going to ask for some. I'm just going to go through a few things on security, just practical things that can be done. So if anybody has any questions on what I say or has any ideas, anything they want to add, we could go into real depth. I just going to brush the surface. And I think, I don't know if anybody knows, everybody here probably has a router at their house, I don't know. They have a modem, obviously. If you've got internet, you probably have a router if you have Wi-Fi in your house. So most routers these days have a filter on them themselves. Like my Netgear has it's called OpenDNS. You can set it for certain levels that affect everybody that gets on. You can set it for particular devices, for particular users. You can shut times off. Like you can make sure, the only device can get on between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. is my device or someone else's. I mean, I don't. Anybody set their router to do this? Anybody want to talk about that? Does anybody know about that? Oh, okay. Well, if you guys want to talk about it, I mean, being a kind of a tech guy, I mean, I haven't done a ton of it, but you can do. There's all sorts of stuff you can do with it. I mean, I think at the basic level, you need to figure out. It's not that hard. You have an admin part. You can go in and say, I want everybody that hits this router, including me, to have this content can't have it, this content can't have it, this content, no sexual, no violence, you might want to put drinking, whatever you decide, there's different categories. You can do a thing called whitelisting, which you say, because we had one filter that wouldn't let the boys go to Lego.com, so I had to put Lego.com in there. I don't know why, but so you can do stuff like that, or you can take off certain lists. You can track what people are, if you wanted to, track what's going on. Since everybody hasn't done this, I think it's a really good first step for anybody that lets your kids get older. Not because you don't trust your kids, but you want to filter as much as you can without them even, it's easy to get to stuff without even trying to get to it. If you search on the internet and you click a link that looks good, all of a sudden something pops up on your screen, you're like, I didn't know that, especially certain technology, it can happen a lot. I mean, there's people just throw stuff, they hijack websites or they make a link look like it's something important when it's not. I mean, it's all over. So I think if you want to talk about it at some point with me, that's fine. We can't get into it totally right now, how to do it. But it's not, I think if you have a router, Michael Winstead too, he's a little network guy. He knows how to do all this stuff too. So you can bombard him if you want. So another thing you can have is on your devices, like your laptops, if you get your kids on there, tablets are a little different, but laptops or PCs or whatever, you can have just filters on there. There's different companies like SafeEyes, NetNanny, Covenant Eyes. So what that does is it it filters that particular computer. I think the router thing does almost as well as that, but this can get more particular. It can be kind of annoying sometimes, especially as the kids get older and they can't get to certain places. You're always going in there as an administrator going, okay, I have that, I have that. But I think it is, again, another good thing to have. That one costs. The one with your router is free. It comes with it. I think this is a little bit more, you can do more with it. That's something to probably add as well. It depends if your kids are using a laptop or if they're in it. Because once you get to Apple devices, it gets a little different. So it's another thing. If you have like an iPhone or Android phone, I'm not totally sure that there's settings on the phone itself that you can make parental controls. You can shut things down. There are things you can do on your mobile, just on your mobile, like AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile. There's things you can set on each phone that limit what you can access. So there's all these steps you can do, I think, that are probably good to do, but there's none of these that are going to be, none of these are foolproof as far as stopping everything. Does anybody have any more questions on that part before I move on? Just practical, physical things you can do with devices. It's good for you to hear that you can do these things. I think it's very important. You should at least have some kind of stopgap, whatever that might be. If it eliminates 95% of stuff without doing much effort, that's pretty good. And you work on the other 5%. Another thing I think is very important is parents should have full authority. I'm going so slow here. Full authority over all your kids' devices and history. And you should be able to go to your kid's phone or whatever and look at it whenever you want. I think that's very important to have that authority. They're not, my opinion, they live in your house. You should have access to whatever they have. You need to monitor what they're doing. I think another thing you should have to do with your spouses, everybody should know everybody's password. The kids should know your password, but the spouses should know each other's passwords. That's a good way in a marriage as well. or if you use a password, there's password utilities out there that are good that you can use. So you need to keep your filters up, share passwords, monitor stuff. And since it's the 500th anniversary, I'm going to quote Martin Luther, even though he's not talking about technology. He says, "We can't stop the birds from flying over our head, but we can stop them from building a nest in our hair." So I think that's kind of what we want to do there, is just try to do what we can to stop the pornography or whatever content coming into our house causing major disruption. It's a big deal. And when your kids are small, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, you're not thinking about it that much. But as they get older, I think the world's changing as far as when kids are getting online unsupervised. And I've got comments on that as well. But I do want to get through some more stuff. So we'll go next. So you have rules for our kids, especially when they're young, yes, limitations, boundaries. And I think I'm just going to go through some things to think about. We're not going to probably dig into these, but things to think about. Limiting screen time, or maybe eliminating screen time for a young age. What about devices in the room by themselves? Do we allow that? When does that happen? I think a lot of people have, I don't know if people here, but I know other people that have their kids every night, they have a device in their room. They're 6 years old, and they go with the device before they go to bed. Is that the best thing we can do based on what we've talked about? What age do you get a cell phone? And what do you have access on that cell phone? What age can you play video games and what kind? Are you supervised? Are you unsupervised? Is it good just to have the TV on for background noise? Social media, when and which types of social media? What apps, what songs can you have? One thing I've always done with the kids, not always the best, but when they wanted to get something new and they didn't really like this, I'd always ask them why. Why do you want that? And then as they got older, Noah's shaking his head. Samantha's here. She'd shake her head big time because we do the why all the time. So why? I'll go why, and then I'll say, well, sell me on it. Give me a pitch. Think about it. I want to know why you want this. Now, obviously, a younger kid's not going to be able to sell you on it as much as they get older, but I always want to know why, because a lot of times they just want it because someone else has it or because they heard about it. I think if you can teach your kids to come up with that, to think that way, that you could, whatever reason it might be, why, I want to hear why. I just don't want to hear because. And I think that's a good thing to do. One thing I think is important, is a good thing to do, is a thing called a nudge. I think, I'm going to talk a little bit of just. So a nudge is, you know, everybody knows a nudge. It just kind of pushes you in a certain direction. And I think that's good to have in your house certain nudges. Like when we first moved here, we had it, you know, I like TV. And we had a TV above the fireplace. But I had doors on it. There was doors on it. So the nudge for me was the doors were shut. So I didn't just walk by and turn the TV on. And it seems something silly, but certain things like that can help you. Or like if we have vegetables at dinner every night, I'll eat them. But if they're not there, I won't miss them. So the nudge, you know, gets me to eat. That's just nudges like that. You think they're simple stuff you can do in your house to push your children each in different directions. Some daily life practices that I think are really good. It might seem radical. I don't know if anybody's read this book, Tech Wise Family. Andy Crouch talks a lot about stuff in here. He talks about shaping character, shaping places, shaping time, and then he gives you a bunch of different ideas. And I think if you read it, you're going to go, oh my, there's no way. What's this guy thinking? There's a lot of radical stuff in there. So I think and he says, take what you want from it. What I like about the book is every chapter he goes through on his practices, he'll rate his own family on it. This is what you should do, but man, we didn't do very well at this. So you have to take it, but there's some good thoughts in there. This one isn't from his, but one thought for our family was reading out loud to our kids. Any of the dads that talk to me, I'm always saying, hey, you should read out loud to your kids. It's a great thing to do, especially when they're small, you're reading simple books, but as they get older, it's very engaging reading. We had The Hobbit, Narnia series multiple times, Harry Potter series, part of Lord of the Rings, but it was amazing how engaged we were at night. There's no devices, no nothing. They're sitting there listening, asking questions. I mean, they outlasted me. There's so many times I go, Dad needs like 5 minutes of sleep. So I'd put the book down, close my eyes, and they'd sit there and wait 5 minutes. I just couldn't keep my eyes open anymore. So I think it's fun. We have great stories now. The kids even talk about, you know, I think it's totally counter to technology. Instead of everybody sitting there on their device, it's very engaging, and they'll remember all of that. One thing that Andy talks about is rest, rest from our devices. So maybe at dinner time, like we talked about last week, or maybe the hour before they go to bed or in the house. What about one day a week or a half day a week or something? I think it's huge if you can get yourself, I know we always have a lot of phone on ourselves, but what can we do to take rest and give our minds peace of mind? Even talks about on vacation a week off from a device. Some that might seem like it's very difficult. Some might say impossible. I know what we do a lot of times. If we take a week vacation, we might have as the kids are older, we might say, okay, no devices, no electronics, but except for like, okay, from 1 to 2, we're all getting an hour. I get to check my email for work. They get to do whatever. So we have a set time. Everybody knows, and it's done. We still might watch a movie together as a family, but just that whole, not everybody's walking around being on their device. Sleep distraction. I think sleep's a huge deal with everyone and kids, and it says that 8 out of 10 teenagers sleep with their phone, 7 out of 10 adults sleep with their phone. Things come in the middle of the night and cause distraction from when they're sleeping. If you're not sleeping well, it can cause all sorts of other issues. So one thing Andy talks about I like too is he says that devices go to bed before we do and we wake up before our devices. So this is hard to do sometimes. You wake up in the morning, the first thing you want to do is, especially if you've got work stuff, you're checking up. And I find myself, if I get up at 5 a.m. or 7 a.m., why at 5 do I need to check my device? And at 7, if I got up at 7, I wouldn't have checked it at 5. So what's my problem? I think we need to think about that as us and teach our children what to check. Oh, man. And then just one more thing. Physical exercise for the kids I think is huge to make sure that we're getting. I know when I do physical exercise, it releases my mind, gives me some peace of mind. We're about done here. Just one more thing I want to talk. To think about one more thing. We're not going to be able to get into it, but I really wanted to get into it, is how we relate to each other with technology. Every family is different. Every child is different. Every situation is different. So what if your child goes over here and you don't want them to watch this or do this, but that family does? I think we need to learn to be very gracious with each other on that, because everybody's a little bit different. Like Rich talked about, nobody thinks the same way, exactly the same way. So parent-to-parent peer pressure can be huge on what you do. And, or if you say, someone comes to your house and they say they can't watch it, you might think, well, what's wrong with me? Why am I doing something wrong? I think we need to set our strike zone, evaluate it based on multiple things, what other people are doing is maybe one of them. But I think when we work with other people, especially in our own congregation, I mean, a bigger deal in school, I think you have a wider range of what's allowed and what's not allowed. But I think we have to, even if it's an unpopular decision, this is what, like I said last week, this is what Stevensons do, this is what you do. But be gracious to other people. Take the blame for your, you know, this is how we do things. And I think that communication with each other is big. I can't say it always works out that way, because some people's feelings, you're always feeling we're getting hurt. No matter how hard we try, we're like, we still hold on to that. But if we can work hard at dealing with other families in this area, especially in our own body of Christ, or other people that are believers, we should treat everyone the same. And I don't know if anybody's had that. I'm sure most people have had this issue, I think. But I think I ran out of time. I'm sorry. I got lots more to say, but that's... Does anybody have any questions? I know I went this rapid fire through there. A lot to think about, a lot to contemplate. Yes, Gilbert. That's a good thought. A good, yes. Pay attention to how we're spending our time is a huge deal. It's easy. It's when you get tired, you want your kids to just rewatch them just for a little bit. But pay attention, what's our habits? And that's what that book, You Are What You Love, is all about, habits. It's a good book to read in that area, not technology, just in life. And let's end with prayer just before we worship. Heavenly Father, we're thankful for this time together. Lord, thankful for these families, for their desire to raise their children right in your eyes. I pray that you would grant us wisdom in these areas. I do pray that we would be gracious to one another, be kind and loving as you are to us. And I pray that for your mercy, and I pray that we would trust you and love our kids, as Rich talked about. We know we make many mistakes, but we know you are a forgiving God. And I do pray that you'd plant the seeds of wisdom in our minds and our children's. In Christ's name we pray, amen.